The D-Fly and Dixie podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Sideline Swap and Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. I was really impressed with them. Dix, when you get your Blue Apron order, the first one comes. I wasn't sure what to expect. It's a box of groceries that it's really neatly packaged and it's refrigerated. And it's groceries with all the ingredients measured out for you for your meal. So I got the 3-meal package for two. So meals for my wife and I for 3 days. It comes with a recipe card for each meal that you're going to do and all the ingredients. So each time you just grab the recipe, pull out of the box or the refrigerator what they sent you for that particular one. And it's really easy to do. They're step-by-step, easy to follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients. And each meal could be done in 40 minutes or so. It was really easy to do and fun. My wife got to cook with me. I had my 3.5-year-old daughter help with one of the menus. It's a good family bonding experience. It's one of the things I like because cooking together, really, it helps build strong family bonds. And research shows Blue Apron families cook nearly 3 times more often. My recipes that I like the most, they had a spaghetti bolognese that was homemade from scratch. Really easy to do and really fun. And tasted great. There was a seared catfish with these udon noodles, something I would never have tried, which is one of the cool things is you let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. And the recipes aren't repeated within a year, so you never get bored of it. And then you just choose from a variety of new recipes each week. And the seared catfish with udon noodles, completely out of my realm of possibilities. But now it might be something I try again, cook. And then my favorite, though, was probably the chicken under a brick recipe with roasted vegetables. Delicious tasting seared chicken leg that you put under a brick, or in this case, you put under like a pot of water. It was awesome. It's super affordable. That's the other great thing. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals that anyone can do. So check out this week's menu and get your first 3 meals free. Yes, free. All you got to do is use the promo code. Go to blueapron.com/lacrosse. blueapron.com/lacrosse. And you can get your first 3 meals free using our promo code. That's blueapron.com/lacrosse. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Before we get started, I want to thank all of you for your support of this podcast and all of the pods here at Inside Lacrosse, including Mondays in the Crease podcast with Ayburn and Devitt, and Friday's Weekend Preview podcast featuring Quint Kesenick and Terry Foy. You guys have been killing it, so keep up the good work. Please keep on subscribing, and please keep sharing it with friends who love lacrosse. Dixie, let's get it. All right, Dix, there were a lot of great games this past weekend on TV. You were out for the Rutgers-Penn State game on Sunday night, and that'll be the first game we jump into. But did you get to see some of the games on TV?
Yes, so I was able to watch a good amount of Notre Dame-North Carolina.
Yeah, it was a great one.
That was a really great game. That means it's almost like Arlotta, and you know, when the Tar Heels are in town, brace yourself because something goofy is going to happen. You think of 2 years ago and the hit on Matt Kavanaugh that led to a 2-minute non-releasable, and they erased a 2-goal deficit to force overtime and scored an OT. And then this year, Bobby Gray with the shot that ripped the net and also tore one of the little metal clasps that you string the net through. Like, that got ripped off as well. So that was a crazy shot. And then a 1-goal win for Notre Dame.
Who was it? Was Chris LaPierre, the midfielder from Virginia?
He played at Virginia, yeah.
Yeah, so in a face-off classic a few years ago, I remember we had those green nets for Headstrong.
Right.
And he ripped one of those on a vicious shot. So Terry and Dan Ayburn were talking about this on the In the Crease podcast yesterday as the greatest net ripping shot of all time. I would say that Chris LaPierre's was better and was still the best one that I was involved in. And I got a little bit of TV time, too, on ESPNU that day.
That's probably why you think it was the best. I don't know what the best one is, but go to Twitter, and I think it's the Notre Dame lacrosse handle. And there is, I don't know if he's a maintenance person or a student working at the game, but he basically has the goal.
Oh, yeah.
And he has the net. It's a periscope, I think. It's some type of video. And it shows not only the net that he ripped or it came off the you know the corner of the net, but he'll show you the metal clasp that snapped. So not only did he rip the net, he pulled the metal thing off of the off the post. Like that's incredible.
Yeah, it was a great shot. There's no
doubt
incredible.
About it. But the thing I would say about the LaPierre shot, I think I do recall that, is a lot of people thought that because the nets were green and they're painted green, that it made the net more taut and maybe more susceptible to be ripped.
Yeah.
Oh, anytime you rip a net, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. But I had to run out there and fix it, and have the you know the coaches and the refs yelling at me to get the net fixed and. I got a little bit of TV time, so that was my favorite and what I would consider the best of all time.
Okay. I don't know what the best of all time is. I know that well, Bobby Gray's silly, shot was pretty crazy.
You know, to give Ayburn, to chirp at those guys a little bit, I think it's sort of a silly conversation. I'm sure there's guys from pre-Mark Dixon's college days even in the 60s, 70s, 80s who were talking about ripping the nets and laughing at this –
I think
trivial conversation.
It was the 80. It was a championship in the early 80s when a Hopkins player, I can't remember who it was, but he ripped the net.
Del Dressel, probably.
It was probably Del, but Georgie Poehler, the old ball boy from Johns Hopkins.
And when you say old ball boy.
Well, yeah, Georgie was in his 90s when he passed away back in 1992. But Georgie went out and stuck his arm through the, because the referees were like, no, the ball missed. And Georgie went out and, like, stuck his arm
demo?
Through the hole.
That's awesome.
And was like, right here, look right here. The best.
Give me your best Georgie story.
Best Georgie story? I mean, Georgie was toward the end of his, end of his life when I came to Hopkins. But the one that every time at practice you're shooting, and you're missing this 90-year-old man by inches. And when you first get there, you're like, hey, well, heads up. And then the guys that are seniors and juniors are like, hey, don't even worry about it. The guy has like a sixth sense. He's never been hit with a ball. Or I was like, never? And they're like, well, I don't know. I've never seen it live. But Georgie would always just like be grumbling too as he's getting the balls. And he'd be like, hit the goddamn net, will you? But –
I just remember Hawsey loving that guy.
Oh, Hawsey. John Hawes loved him. Everybody loved Georgie.
Yeah.
But probably the most memorable story when I was there was, it was my freshman year, 1991, we're playing in the Carrier Dome. It's my first time in the Carrier Dome. And anyone who's familiar with the Carrier Dome or any dome stadium, I would imagine, you have to go through a series of doors when you enter the facility. Meaning coming from the outside to the inside.
Like
and
revolving
then,
doors. Because
no, they weren't revolving. They were not revolving.
The fan doors revolving.
Or
they used to be.
I don't know about that, but the player doors. So to get into the facility, you have to open the door, you come in, and then you shut the door, and then you have to open up the door to the actual dome.
Like
to
on
come
a submarine.
In. Yeah, exactly. So to get onto the field is the same thing. You have to enter. And then you're in a holding area almost. Then they open the door to the dome. So in other words, you can't have two doors open at the same
time. An airlock, basically.
And Georgie wasn't paying attention, or I can't remember exactly. I was not in the doorway with him, but he had his thumb on the door on the door jamb, and that thing shut, and it took his thumb right off. I think it was maybe John Haas that was next to him. He's like, hey, coach. And he just holds up his nub, and it was, like, bleeding.
Of course it was.
Yeah, yeah. So he had to, like, and this is terrible. I can't remember exactly what happened, if he was able to get the other part of the thumb and go to the hospital and get it attached or something like that. But, yeah, it took off part of his thumb. in the doorway at Syracuse.
Story. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I mean, don't feel sorry for him, but that's.
Oh yeah, but that was Georgie. Like it was, and he wasn't.
He
like,
was tough. His nails.
Oh yeah, man. If I
didn't care knee, about
I'd
getting
be
healed.
Like, ah, help, help! You know, Georgie was just like, hey. Coach.
Yeah, that's so. That's a guy who's been hit by a lot of lacrosse balls. He's yeah. like, this doesn't hurt. This is nothing.
Well, that's, yeah, and that's like, you know, people are like, I don't worry about him. He's never been hit. I'm like, really? He's never been hit? So that's a good Georgie Poehler story.
Yeah, it is.
But my favorite, like shot story, it's not about a ripped net, but it was Brian Wood in the 84 National Championship game. They were doing the game on ESPN. It was Hopkins-Syracuse at Delaware, and they had the big, fat, fuzzy microphone set up in the upper 90, and Brian Wood, first shot of the game, drills it and knocks the microphone off. I mean, it's great. You can get it on YouTube. You can hear, I think it was Leif Elsmo actually calling the game, and Wood takes this shot, and it's just like right with the so they get out there to repair the microphone, and this takes a good like 10 or 15 minutes. Next play, next shot, Brian Wood takes out the microphone again. I think he scored maybe three or four goals in that game. He had two or three in the first quarter. He's a freshman. And he took out the microphone not once but twice in the national championship game. Didn't rip the net, but
that's pinpoint shooting.
Oh, it was like I mean, that doesn't even do it justice. It was like it was great.
I'll have to look that up.
If I
find that, I'll attach it to the story.
Look it up. Look up
inside lacrosse.com.
Look up the Notre Dame on Twitter.
I'll attach that
for Bobby Gray's shot, and then go to YouTube. A 1984 national championship, Brian Wood, or something like that. You know, there's the whole game is out on YouTube. The
yeah, they'll be in the if I find them, they'll be in the story for this podcast post. So, Dix, we're getting close, man. We're getting close to May Madness.
Yep.
And the playoffs are set for a bunch of the leagues. The ACC and Patriot Tourney start this week. And then in a few other leagues, the seedings are already set for the playoffs.
Yep.
And then in the rest of the leagues, this weekend is huge for determining playoff seedings, whose postseason fates are sealed, whose seasons are over, and whose are just beginning with lots of hope and excitement. So let's get right into it. One of those teams that is on the verge of going from the number one team in the country just 5 weeks ago, could be on the outside looking in again, as a game you did on Sunday night. Penn State 13, Rutgers 7, and Penn State just dominated this game.
They did, and this is a Penn State team that had struggled a lot at faceoffs. Gerard Arcari in particular, the freshman sensation, he just has just really not – hadn't played well up until the game against Rutgers at the faceoff dot, and he was terrific. He just dominated the faceoffs the entire game. I'd have to look up his – it was 16 out of 20. Scored a goal. Was just awesome. And this is against a guy, Joe Francisco, who a week earlier had a ton of success against Maryland, was a big reason why Rutgers took that game to overtime. And then the week before against Michigan, he was sensational. So – it was just a dominant effort by Arcari, and I think that Penn State did a better job of handling the moment, recognizing the situation. They were more aggressive on ground balls. Obviously, when you win the faceoff battle like that, you're going to win ground balls, but I thought that Penn State did a great job on ground balls. They won all the hustle plays. And if not for Rutgers goaltender Max Edelman, who finished with 16 saves, 8 in each half, you know, this game could have been over at halftime, and it wasn't. You know, Rutgers was still in it. Penn State comes out, makes the first couple plays of the third quarter, and then they're just kind of winning it going away. So a dominant effort by Penn State.
So Rutgers is faced with a key pivotal game this weekend against Ohio State, where they have a couple of really good wins. They beat Army and they beat Princeton, who are also bubble teams. If they don't win their conference tournaments.
And they also beat Fairfield, and that win is now solid with the Stags, and we'll talk about them later in the podcast, but now that win over Fairfield, at least here today,
sure,
has some value.
But they really struggled in the Big Ten season, and they need another signature win. So if they could get the Ohio State win, the game is at Rutgers, so that's an advantage. Ohio State's been incredible at home this year.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about the Buckeyes in a second. But it's... Rutgers really needs to get this. This could be their at-large ticket.
Think about So Rutgers is currently 12th in the RPI, and a win over Ohio State, I think, gets them into the NCAA tournament.
I do, too.
I really do.
I think so.
And there you have, because I think Penn State already played their way in, and I firmly believe that Ohio State, Hopkins, and Maryland are all
So the Big
locks.
Ten could be looking at five of the six teams.
Absolutely. So Rutgers,
that wouldn't be a surprise.
The Rutgers-Ohio State, well, it would be a surprise if you're talking about preseason, but if the way the season's unfolded.
I mean, right now.
Yeah. And I know we're going to talk about Hofstra later as well, or the CAA as well. There is precedent for a team not making a conference tournament but making it into the NCAAs, and Hofstra is that team. They've done it at least once. I keep meaning to look this up. They may have even done it twice. So there is precedent there. What's interesting about Ohio State and Rutgers is 2 years ago, Ohio State was going to the Big Ten tournament. They eventually went to the NCAA quarterfinals and lost to Denver. But Rutgers ran them off the field in 2015, their first ever Big Ten conference win. And that kind of set the tone for them last year in a turnaround season where they didn't make the NCAAs, but they made the Big Ten championship game, knocked off Johns Hopkins twice. I mean, that was a real turnaround season last year for Rutgers. Take Ohio State last year, last regular season game in the shoe. Ohio State had a down year, losing record. They're not going anywhere. They're not going to the Big Ten tournament. They're not going anywhere. They knock off Rutgers. And both Brian Brecht in 15, Nick Myers in 16 were like, wow, if we would have just played like this all year, you know, this could have been different. And now Ohio State propelled themselves with that momentum from that Rutgers win into a solid 2017. So it's really interesting when those two teams play each other, how the winner of those games kind of really gets momentum. So if Rutgers is able to knock off Ohio State, I think they seal the deal and they're in the NCAA tournament.
So let's talk about the Buckeyes and how they got to where they are in their high RPI and high ranking in the poll. They got an 11-10 win over Maryland at home in the shoe overtime, and a very impressive comeback from a big early deficit that Maryland got out to a really hot start, even without Colin Heacock playing. And the Buckeyes come back and get a signature win.
Down 7-2, and I was watching. I was flipping between this game and the Hopkins Michigan game as I waited to do a track and field assignment in Iowa City, Iowa, for the Big Ten Network. So I turned the TV off and headed off to that assignment when it was 7-2 Maryland. And you're thinking, game's over.
Yeah, it wasn't Ohio State's day.
No,
Maryland looks great.
Maryland's just clicking, and yeah, Heacock's not playing, but. You know, Rambo's taking care of business, and Rotans has had, you know, had a hat trick already, and then, you know, I'm working the track and field meet, and the guy doing stats for us is like, hey, Maryland, Ohio State's headed to overtime. I'm like, what? So, I think there's a couple of things here, you know, a couple of myths that were debunked. Maryland, if you fall behind to them by 4 or 5 goals, it's over because of their defense. And if Ohio State falls behind by 4 or 5 goals, it's over for them because they are not a team that can play from behind. Both of those were debunked. And I think the reasons for that are, one, Dan Morris, the goalie for Maryland, was off in this game. He only made 6 saves, none in the third quarter. When Ohio State, you know, at the end of the first half, they started climbing back in, but they turned a 7-2 deficit with 6 straight goals into an 8-7 advantage. And then it became a dogfight. I mean, I watched Dan Morris against Rutgers make 0 saves, and he gave up 6 goals. And then from there, he was unbelievable. Career high in saves, including 3 or 4 in overtime that kept Maryland in the game and gave him an opportunity to win at the end. So Morris is just very, very inconsistent. The second thing about this is Ohio State is never out of any game, no matter what the score, because of Jake Withers. He has established himself as the top faceoff man in the Big Ten. And if it weren't for Trevor Baptiste in Denver, he would be the number one faceoff player in the country. So those two factors, I think, weighed heavily in this game, in addition to the fact that, you know, players like Eric Fennell and Johnny Pearson stepped up huge for Ohio State. They're different offensively this year. Pearson's been the only long-distance guy that they've had there, but now with Trey LeClaire, the freshman, defenses, you know, can't pack it in as much as they used to be able to against Ohio State with a lot of the smoke and mirrors and two-man game and, you know, Jesse King holding on to the ball for extended periods. This is a very dangerous offense, and Jake Withers keeps feeding them, and he's a difference maker.
Another home team that made a huge comeback, down 4 goals in the fourth quarter, I believe, Albany comes back and gets a big win over Yale, 13-12, in a highly enjoyable game to watch on ESPN3. Dick, so you, while you were doing this track meet on Saturday evening and afternoon,
yeah,
my wife and our three-year-old daughter were out doing something, and they're out for the night. And I put my son to bed around 7:30, grilled a giant steak on my grill that I did a little maintenance on. So
what
it was
kind
like,
of, so you like a porterhouse or a T-bone or
this was a ribeye.
Ribeye?
This was like a 2-inch thick ribeye.
Okay.
And sat down with a little bit of a just turn, you know, TV.
Yeah.
At my some kitchen table. You've been to my house. You see how like I
yes.
can maneuver stuff around. And just sat there and watched that game and just had the most enjoyable time
great.
Watching that game. It was
Simple pleasures.
Yeah, it was one of the simple pleasures. And what a fun game to watch. The Albany, they're really building something. I mean, they've been doing it for a while, but the fans are they dedicated their stadium, I think, this weekend. It's now Casey Stadium. What an atmosphere.
Yeah.
And what a fun game to watch.
I got to go to Albany for the first time last spring when Chris Cotter and I did the America East Championship game on ESPNU. And I may have told this story before, but we were both like, it's going to be Albany and Stony Brook, no question. And then both of them were upset in the conference semifinals by Hartford and Vermont. So it was a great game. Like, I don't know, you think about going to Albany, you think about, like, you know, rainy and cold, and it's actually, like, a really cool town, and easy flight in and out of Baltimore on Southwest, and it was a fantastic game. And the venue, though, was awesome. And now we've seen twice, you know, when Albany is the Danes are playing, how excited the student body and the fan base are for Albany lacrosse. Great atmosphere against Maryland. And that atmosphere was replicated, if not exceeded, on Saturday against Yale, a team that's red hot, ruling the Ivy League, playing great lacrosse.
Yeah, I think that's their first loss in the past 8 games. I think Yale had won 7 in a row.
Yeah, and they lead going into this they're in the fourth quarter, 12 minutes left, and they go up 12-8. You can never count out Albany out. I mean, they're just too high powered of an offense, and they've got a tremendous faceoff man in Ireland, but Connor Mackey for Yale is no slouch either. So that was a battle all day. That ended up being 50-50 in the fourth quarter. But Albany made the plays, and, you know, if there is an Achilles heel for Yale this year, it is, you know, talking with Coach Andy Shea, it's the defense continues to be a work in progress. Goaltending has been strong the last couple of weeks. But when you're facing Albany at home, you know, prime time, they just came back and made plays to get the W. So hats off. I think there's two things from this game that I took away. One, Ben Reeves was held to one goal by Albany. So tremendous job by the defense of the Great Danes. And the other thing is Bennett Drake stepped up with a huge game, 4 goals for Albany. And this is he's like a forgotten guy almost. I mean, they've got guys that can play in Eccles and Drake, and, you know, Connor Fields is a Towerton finalist, in my opinion, and everything seems to be talking about Connor Fields, and that's deserved, but you forget that Albany does have other weapons that can step up, and Drake was a guy that tied the game at 12 with just under 3 minutes to go, and then they win, and then they win the game with 30 seconds left.
I think that's been the question about Albany is, do they have some depth of scoring?
Right.
There are some other guys who can step up, and they showed that on Saturday night.
Yep.
Hey, another big game that took place in the Patriot League in upstate New York. Loyola 14, Army 6. Each of those teams are now tied at 6-2 throughout the Patriot League. Because of the head-to-head win, Loyola gets the first seed in the Patriot League tournament, has 6 teams in it. And the Black Knights of Army, Army West Point will have the 2 seed, and Loyola will have the first seed, overall seed, waiting for the quarterfinal winners to come to them.
And, I mean, Loyola's just been up and down all year, and the Patriot League is no exception, losing conference games to Bucknell and then to Boston University, but both of them by 1 goal. But still, you know, you consider Loyola to always be the front runner in the Patriot, even with Army stepping up, having a great season. The Black Knights have stumbled a little bit lately, losing to Navy, and now they lose at home by 8 to Loyola. You know, I think it just talks about how dangerous Loyola is. You know, Pat, how great Pat Spencer is. He just picked up his second straight Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year award, and he's a sophomore. So the guy's in line to be a four-time Patriot League Offensive Player of the Year.
That's insane.
That is, and he's a great player. You know, goaltending has been tough all year for Loyola. It seems like Jacob Stover just really hasn't recovered from, you know, that shellacking that he got in the championship weekend last year. They've gone with Grant Lamone at times. But they get good faceoff work, and they've got a terrific offense. It's just defensively, Loyola, it's been a real question mark for the Greyhounds this year, but they turned in a superior effort this past Friday night up at West Point on the road, home field on the line, number one seed on the line. They got the job done.
I think that home field is huge when it comes to, I mean, from Loyola or Army's standpoint, is going. They would have to go back up to West Point again. That's tough. Being able to host that here in Baltimore has got to be a big advantage for them going into the weekend.
Yeah, and they, you know, Loyola, they get to sleep in their own beds. They get their own routine. I mean, it's, yeah. The home field in the Patriot League hasn't meant a whole lot, especially when Navy's been the number one seed. You know, they faltered the last couple of years, losing in the first, you know, semifinals as the number one seed. So we'll see how this plays out. You know, you mentioned Army. You know, Rutgers, that's one of their big wins, quote-unquote, and obviously that loss has lost a little bit of luster over the last couple of weeks with the Black Knights struggling, but, you know, that win over Syracuse is huge for them.
What's happened to Army's offense?
Everybody at this point in the season has a little bit of, you know, they're banged up, they're bruised, they're a little tired, and, you know, I thought Rutgers looked really tired on Sunday night. You know, it's just I don't know exactly where to put my finger on it, but they are just, you know, they're just kind of scuffling along right now offensively. They've got really, really good players, you know, Cole Johnson, chief among them. They just haven't been able to really put it together. Their face-off man is the Patriot League face-off specialist of the year, Graber. So he's done a great job. So I don't really have the answers. I haven't studied or watched, you know, I've watched Army play, but I haven't really dug deep into Army, as I really haven't had any Patriot League responsibilities in 2017. You know, they're currently 19th in the RPI. They've got to win at least a semifinal game. And if they do lose the championship game, I still think they're in the conversation for an NCAA bid with that win over Syracuse. And if Syracuse can continue their success, you know, if they, you know, at least win one game in the ACCs, and if they capture the ACC championship, obviously that chip that the Black Knights are holding, if they don't win the Patriot League title, is a big one. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, so it's a big weekend in Baltimore for Patriot League teams and fans. Dix, before we get to some things you call drive-bys, where we'll mention some other games from this week, let's talk about Sideline Swap. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. So the MLL season started this week, Dix.
Yes.
And
all were one-goal games, I think.
Yeah, they
too.
Were really exciting Incredible. Games. And showcasing some really exciting gear.
Yeah.
On the teams. And I bet some of that is available on Sideline Swap. You can go there right now, sidelineswap.com, and find great deals from college and pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely, list it in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's Sideline, SWAP, sidelineswap.com. All right, Dix, a few drive-bys here. Fairfield beats Towson 9-8 in a little bit of a surprise. Great win for the Stags. And they set up like a multi-tie at the top of the CAA standings.
Crazy when you consider coming into this game, Fairfield had lost four in a row and five out of the last six. The win during that stretch against the New Jersey Institute of Technology. So we're talking losses to Penn State, Villanova, Hofstra, Drexel, and UMass. Towson comes in. They win this game. Man, they're sitting pretty. They're probably in a strong position to win, lock up the number one seed and host.
Towson, as you're talking about.
Yeah, the Tigers. And they lose 9-8. So, you know, it's May. It's anything's possible on any given day. And credit the Stags winning 9-8. Now, they like they said, they set up that log jam. Huge game this weekend. Towson entertains Hofstra at home. You're
calling that, right?
I am, for LAC Sports Network, 12 noon on Saturday. Huge game. So the CAA is always a fun conference. I always equate that to the NFC North, you know, kind of a black and blue.
Blue collar. They're going to
beat up on each other. Yeah, so that's going to be a great game. But hats off to Fairfield for, you know, really reviving their season and making it, you know, giving themselves an opportunity to play their way into the NCAA tournament.
The Hofstra-Towson game could end up 5-4.
Yep.
Or 14-13.
Yeah, either way. It could, you know, it's – I tell you what, man, Fairfield's got to take the AQ because they're sitting right now with 45th RPI, 4-9 record. So
it's not
mathematically, the numbers are not there. Yeah. So,
hey, Binghamton almost pulled off a huge upset. They took Syracuse to the wire. Syracuse gets a 9-8 win, and surprise, surprise, Syracuse has another one-goal win. I think this game is a lot more about Binghamton. You know, Syracuse probably due for a little bit of a mental letdown. Still got the W in the Carrier Dome, but Binghamton is a solid team, man. I really would like to see them make some noise in their conference tournament, which should be coming up.
Yeah, they're going to have an opportunity, and UMBC is now in the America East tournament, but it's Albany's to lose. But you know what? We were saying that a year ago, and look what happened.
I know,
so
I was surprised.
Yeah, the Bing could turn some heads, but it's great to see because, you know, Kevin McEwen is the head coach there, and I know I've told the story of, you know, back a couple years ago when I did it was Binghamton UMBC on ESPNU, the old, you know, WMAR simulcast days, and McEwen had just taken over when their head coach was let go for some, you know, it really seemed like some flimsy reasons, but, you know, I was impressed with McEwen keeping it together and, you know, his energy and his perspective, and then you know, unfortunately he didn't get the head coaching job, which I thought was a miss on the Bing's part, but now he's in charge and he's making things happen. So congratulations to them. And I mean, Syracuse, let's look at the schedule, all right? One goal wins. Albany, one goal. Virginia, one goal. St. John's, one goal, right? Hopkins, one goal. Duke, one goal. Notre Dame, one goal. North Carolina, one goal. Binghamton, one goal.
I think they only have two or three games where they didn't win by two goals.
I got eight fingers. I'm holding up eight fingers. They are 8-1 in one-goal games. That is crazy.
It is.
That's great. But the dangerous part about that is they could easily have gone the other way. And let's see. You know, the Orange have North Carolina again in the first ACC semifinal this Friday. Then they travel to Colgate to close out the regular season. So, you know, we'll see. But this – I mean, this Syracuse team is good. You know, they're very good. Ben Williams is healthy and making plays at the faceoff. So – you know, anything's possible, but this is a team that could be in Foxborough Championship weekend, or they could lose in the NCAA first round.
Yeah, Paul Carcaterra joined Dan Abern for some discussion yesterday on the Crease podcast.
We should get Cark on our show.
We should.
I've been on Cark's podcast before. We should get him on.
And go listen to it because it's a great listen if you haven't.
If you weren't
guest
averse, we would maybe have him.
I want you all to myself.
You really do. You're very selfish that way. Look, what Paul
in the summertime, we'll have whoever you want on here.
Summertime, yeah, when everybody's listening, okay.
He talked exactly about that, how Syracuse has, you know, probably escaped a few, and the number of one-goal wins, even as a Syracuse guy, like, it makes you a little skeptical of being, like, the strong number one team or number one seed that, you know, they haven't been dominant in their wins. Isn't a knock on it. I mean, it's a credit to them that they keep winning these close games. But at the same time, you know, they're not thumping teams like St. John's or Binghamton, who, you know, are maybe down in the RPI a little bit and getting, you know, they're not blowing teams out. And that's what you look for a dominant over one. If you're talking about a clear favorite to win the NCAA tournament, you can't say that, you know, they are as the number one team in the country right now.
They did smoke Hobart and Cornell. So, but that was April 5th and April 11th. So, I mean, I don't know.
Where are those two teams?
Where St. John's is.
I know.
Right?
I know.
And they only beat the Johnnies by one goal. So, no, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. It's just Syracuse doesn't have any superstars. Nick Mariano is their best player, along with Sergio Salcido. And then there's like a bunch of guys you just really aren't familiar with.
Would you throw Ben Williams in there, though?
Sure. No, I would, absolutely. But it's, I mean, But that's college lacrosse in 2017. Yeah. The number one ranking has been it's been a revolving door.
I know. That's why it's so fun.
I mean, it's like trying to, you know, at Navy when they grease up that pole.
The maypole.
You know, and you're like, hey, there's a number one ranking at the top. Go ahead. Oh, I got it. Oh, you fell off. Okay, the next one. You know, but Syracuse, I think Syracuse is like the longest running number one now. What, they held it 2 weeks in a row?
Three weeks in a row? 3 weeks straight.
I mean, that's like, you know, but in 2017, that's like, okay, who's been married to Liz Taylor the longest, you know? Oh, I got Larry 10 King. Minutes right here. Larry King. Syracuse, you're on the air. Let's say hello to Albany. Like, people, callers never had names with Larry King. It was just their hometown.
All right, let's keep whipping around the country. So in the Big East, there was a game. Providence had some high hopes. They went out to Denver, and Denver said, not this time. Providence, Denver gets a pretty easy 12-2 win over the Friars, sort of sending them back to earth a little bit. But the Friars are still in there, having a great season. But Denver is exerting their dominance at the right time of the year.
Yeah, and this is typical Denver lacrosse. When I say that, tough early season schedule where they're in the spotlight, you know, playing Notre Dame, playing Duke, playing North Carolina. And then they
playing Ohio State,
playing Towson.
Yeah, great schedule.
Yeah. And then they kind of disappear because the Big East, just from top to bottom, isn't one of those conferences that you pay as much attention to as you do with the ACC, as you do with the Big Ten, even the CAA, you know. Villanova's having a good season, and they go out to Denver and lose 16-11. So Villanova's kind of knocked off the radar. And then Providence took down Marquette, maybe their biggest win in program history. And then they go out to Peter Barton and lose 12-2. So, I mean, the Denver has Marquette twice over the next couple of weeks. They're in Milwaukee this Saturday to play Marquette, a team that beat them last year for the Big East tournament title. And then they have to turn around and play Marquette again in Providence. So the tournament is already predetermined, and it's in Providence, Rhode Island. So a double dip for Denver against Marquette. Both on the road, so we'll see how that goes. They got guys that can hurt you all over the field, and that's the way Denver does it. The dragon that resides in Denver, you know, that you always have to, you know, if you want to go kiss the princess, that you always have to cross is Trevor Baptiste, and he's just amazing. He continues to get better. He's so dominant, and that's the. You know, once you think you have a chance against Denver, you just always have to go out there against Baptiste, and that's a tall order.
Very interesting IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week poll this week. Four guys, Cole Williams, Johns Hopkins, Attackman. Is he playing some midfield too?
Yeah, they run him out of the box with good matchups using his size against shorties.
Yeah, so he has 2 goals, 1 assist in their 19-9 win over Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Luke McCaleb. Just continues to get it done for Brown. He's 3 goals, 1 assist, and their 13-10 win over Cornell. He's having a great season.
Yeah.
Armin Medgalchi.
Yeah, freshman Princeton defenseman.
Yeah. 1 ground ball, 3 calls turnovers, and their 12-9 win over Harvard. That kid's he's outstanding.
He's good.
And did you know he was the starting goalkeeper on their undefeated soccer team at McDonough?
I did not.
Yeah, that kid's an incredible athlete. And then our winner this week got 55% of our votes. Alec Van de Bovenkamp.
Furman.
Goalie for Furman. He's had 9 saves and only gave up 2 goals in their 18-3 win versus VMI.
Mm.
He got, you know, pulled, rested a little bit at the end of the game. That kid is at 57% on the season, and they're 7-4 with him in the net. So they started 0-2, had another kid who was starting in goal. His first game he started was against UNC in their third game of the season.
Yeah.
He made 16 saves against the Tar Heels. Gave up only 7 goals, kept them in the game. They lost 7-3. They couldn't score, but he kept them in that game.
Yeah.
Big kid, 6'2", 210, from Hinsdale, Illinois. Played at Culver Military Academy. And
I thought you were going to say he was from the Netherlands. Straight from Copenhagen. No, it's Denmark. Copenhagen, Denmark.
Yeah. So congratulations to Alec Van de Bovenkamp, who is our epic IL Committed Academy Freshman of the Week. for his play really all season. He's been awesome, but against VMI, he has 9 saves, only lets in 2 goals.
The Dazzling Dutchman. I don't know if he's Dutch or not, but I'm going to call him the Dazzling Dutchman.
That's such a good nickname that you should go
with. Yeah,
why
not?
Yeah. The Commit Academy is a transformative 3-day developmental camp that Inside Lacrosse and Epic do together. It is going to be the last weekend in July, July 28th to 30th here in Baltimore at Goucher College. It is, if you're a Division I player, you need to be there. And that is what was a quote from a player last year who had an amazing experience. We're also doing a Girls Committed Academy. It'll be July 7th and 9th here in Baltimore. Again, a great experience for all involved, and we are very excited for the Committed Academy come around this year. So let's just stay here for a second. In the SoCon, there was, Richmond lost to Air Force 9-7. Sets up a huge game this week. Furman and Richmond play for the top seed in the SoCon playoffs. Furman started 1-6 with Van de Bovenkamp and a few other guys really starting to make some finding their way.
Finding their sea legs.
Yeah, they've won 6 straight, and all in the SoCon. So Furman and Richmond, big game this weekend.
Yeah, kind of as the season's gone along, you're thinking it's Richmond's conference to lose. High points down a little bit. You can't really face off all that well, so they've had a tough go of it. Air Force, it's
steady, but it had some ups and downs.
Well, Air Force, big win over Duke in the beginning
of the
season.
Flying high after
they were. Oh, nice. Yeah, look at you. And then they kind of fell off the radar with some losses.
Nice.
So Furman's been steady Eddie, starting 1-6, losses to North Carolina, Penn State, tough loss to Vermont in their season opener, but they've stayed the course. And back when I did that Penn State game on Big Ten Network, that was the end of February. I think at the time Furman was 0-3, 0-4, and Richie Mead is, he's not a really excitable kind of guy, but he's like, I feel good. I feel good about where we are. I know we haven't won, but, and you are seeing what Coach Mead saw, and they're doing great in conference. And the reason that they played that beefed up out of conference schedule was to get ready for the SoCon, and you see it's paying dividends. So good to see the Paladins having some success.
So it's time for the Maverick Media Poll conversation. So Dix, we talked about SU holding down the number one spot for the third week in a row, which is in a topsy-turvy season that we're having, that to find some regularity and continuity in the number one team is pretty exciting. But here's our top five now. Maryland, they had that setback at Ohio State. They're 9-3, and they bring in the number five spot on the poll. At fourth is Ohio State, 12-2. Duke. Talk about teams sort of flying under the radar. They're a number three team in the country.
Winning.
They're 11-3. I think I looked it up. At one point, they had slipped to 18th in the country.
Yeah, after they lost to
Air Force, I think.
It was Air Force. They lost to Denver early in the season. And they squeaked by Richmond. And at the time, I don't think we realized how talented Richmond was going to be. So that was kind of and even though they had lost to Richmond last year, too. So
they've slowly climbed up the
– Yep.
Having a great season, and we'll see what happens. They're hosting the ACC tournament this weekend, so that should be an advantage for them. Denver is number two. They're 10-2. And the number one team, Cuse, is at 11-1, coming into the ACC tournament. So, Dix, who is your top five?
Five, I had Albany, just based on that win against Yale. I know they lost that close game to Maryland. I mean, I had, Ohio State and Albany at five. That was a tough decision to make. I have Notre Dame at four. And the reason I have Notre Dame at four, I know other people dropped them in their polls, or at least in the cumulative tally, but with Notre Dame had an impressive win at home against Ohio State. 13-7, I think, was the final. I couldn't put the Buckeyes above the Irish. So Notre Dame's four. And then my top three are consistent with the poll. Duke at three, Denver two, and Syracuse one.
Yeah, and that's your Maverick Media poll this week. So let's get into what to watch this week, Dix. As we've said from the top, this is we've been waiting all season for this, and there's some exciting games coming up. The weekend kicks off with the Patriot League playoffs on Friday night at Loyola. So the 3 and 4 seeds will be determined, but Army is a 2 seed. Loyola is the 1 seed, as we discussed. ACC tournament, we talked about that. It's on Friday night. You'll be doing the Hofstra-Towson game.
Noon Saturday.
Ohio State and Rutgers, big game.
Big game. Big game.
Villanova at Providence.
That'll determine a little, you know, seeding action in the Big East.
Furman at Richmond.
Actually, you know what? No, that'll be a repeat because I think Villanova-Providence then play each other again. The same way Marquette plays Denver, I think it's Villanova-Providence in a repeat. I think those seeds are set.
Just going to run those games back.
Just going to run them back.
They just like turn their pennies inside out.
It's like the NFL almost. It's like the last regular season game. You know, you got the Bungles playing the Steelers, and then they got to play the next week in the wild card.
I see it more like playing pickup hoops. You're like, you guys want to run this one back?
I don't know.
All right, let's go. Start over again.
Look at you.
And then the granddaddy of them all, Johns Hopkins at Maryland, the greatest rivalry in the sport of lacrosse.
Yeah.
And you'll be doing the call on that one.
Yeah, man. Myself, Network. Me and Joe Beninati, 8 o'clock Saturday night, under the lights in College Park, Big Ten Network. Can't much better than that.
I can't wait. I got to get a plan together of what I'm going to do, what I'm going to eat, who am I going to invite over to watch this game. This is going to be, I can't wait.
Right.
It's so much fun.
So you're going to watch, you're not going
to
come
down. I can't get to the game. Yeah, I got to probably put my kids to bed. And
that's fine.
I can't wait, man.
Can't wait. Dan can't wait for the game.
I know, I bet you can't either.
What's
your, from your playing days, what's your favorite Hopkins Maryland memory?
That's an interesting question because when I, let me think about that for a second. So when I was at Hopkins, Maryland was down a little bit. And historically speaking, I guess you could say Hopkins was as well. But we made 2 national semifinal appearances, 92 and 93. Maryland actually in 91 made the championship weekend and lost to Towson in the semis when the Tigers went to play North Carolina for the national title. But Syracuse was kind of the golden goose at the time. Princeton was getting really good. And, you know, I had a coach, Tony Seaman, who was not a Hopkins alum. So our focus, like our most intense weeks of preparation were typically Syracuse, Virginia. And Maryland was an important game, but I don't think we realized at the time we were there how big of a rivalry it was. Again, because, you know, maybe because our coach wasn't an alum, and also Maryland they weren't as good as they had been in the 70s and the 80s. They were down a little bit. And that's no disrespect to Maryland. It was just, you know, Syracuse was the measuring stick, you know, with the Gates. And then Carolina, that's the other one. Carolina, we never beat Carolina when I was there, 0-5. So that was always like a golden goose as well. And Carolina had won the 91 title. But I probably my favorite memory would be my senior year. It was homecoming, and we needed that game. We were coming off of losses to Carolina. I'm trying to think who else. Actually, we were in good shape. I can't remember. But anyway, it was homecoming, and it was, when you talk about the 10,000 people, like it was like close to 10,000 people being there. It was a gorgeous day. And when you say 10, it was probably like more like 7 or 8,000, but it was a gorgeous day. It was a back and forth game. It was physical. It was chippy. It was everything that Maryland and Hopkins lacrosse was. And that's like probably my fondest memory of, and I actually got to play a couple minutes in that game. Terry Reardon had broken his thumb the week before against Army. So I played extensively in that game. And then I got an opportunity to run some more in that Maryland Hopkins game, and just stepping on the field, and, you know, for a guy who didn't play a ton in his college career, like that was pretty special to, you know, and it was intense, and it was crazy. It was a crazy environment. So that would be my best memory from Maryland Hopkins during my playing days.
You mentioned Terry Reardon, one of the all-time greats at Hopkins, attackman, graduated in 1995, ran on the same line with Brian Piccola and Dave Marr.
Yeah.
And Dave's and Scott's son, you know, is Kyle, who's having a really coming on for the Blue Jays now. But the next year, do you remember the game down in College Park? Hopkins was undefeated.
No, I have no recollection of that game whatsoever. Seriously, you're going to ask me if I remember that game?
But I don't know if you were
there.
I don't know if you were there or not.
Yeah, I was working for ESPN. I was the runner.
All right.
It was my first gig with ESPN. I had to go run around the stadium and grab people for interviews for the sideline reporter, who was Christy Lee. So, yeah, I was at that game, Dan.
So it was a beautiful day, if you remember it. Late April, probably. Just like
late April was more. Oh, you're talking about the regular season game.
Regular season game.
I was not there for. No, yes, I was there for the regular season game. I was working STX Lacrosse Weekly. Yeah, so I was there. It was a 16-15 game when Terry scored the game winner, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great crowd in Bird Stadium for that game. It must have been 15,000 people there. And it was.
I thought you were going right to the national semifinal game.
Yeah, well, some of you maybe should listen a little bit more in depth. I was talking about the regular season game, the rivalry game.
Well, in a typical Hopkins fashion, though, you're only going to talk about the games that they won. So, you know, I see where you're coming from. I feel you.
We call that the Brian Dougherty game. Yeah. He was incredible in that semifinal game that Hopkins lost in Bird later that season.
Yep.
But Terry, I remember it because he made Sports Illustrated. There was like a, you know, the not faces in the crowd, but the
The first couple pages, the three pages where they
like
had the big
double
pictures,
spread photos. Yeah. I remember he was in there. I think I just remember he was in Sports Illustrated like the following week or something like that after his Maryland game, and he was. I mean, it was a sensational game and lots of fun on a great season for Hopkins that ended in just bitter disappointment.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was tough,
and helped to lead to the eventual ouster, I guess, of Coach Seaman at the helm of the Blue Jays, which was the next year. I think was 96 his last year then?
No, the last year for Tony was 1998.
Eight.
But his last game was at College Park in the NCAA quarterfinals against Maryland. I was doing that game on the radio, and I believe that was an overtime game. And if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Brian Zeller from Maryland that scored the game winner. But 1998 was
his last season.
His last season.
That was a game. Didn't Hopkins lose to Duke?
97 NCAA quarterfinals at College.
Had
remember,
a lead to
remember. College Park was a house of horrors for Johns Hopkins back in the 90s. In 93 national semifinals, my junior year, we lost to North Carolina. 95 was the national semifinal loss to Maryland,
Terps.
The undefeated team.
Yeah.
96, can't remember where that ended, but 97, Duke in Bird Stadium, quarterfinals. 98, Maryland in Bird Stadium, then Bird Stadium, I should say, no longer Bird Stadium. And then 99, where was 99? John Hawes, when he took over, went to the national semifinals. They lost to Syracuse in 2000. No, 01 was – 01 they lost in the quarters. 01 lost in the quarters at Maryland to Notre Dame.
I remember
that was Dave Petromala's first year. 2000 –
wasn't there Glatzel that played for Notre Dame that year? Like
Tom attacker. Glatzel, yeah. His brother John was an All-American. Well, they're both All-Americans. His brother John was the defender of the year at Syracuse.
Yeah, I think Glatzel had a really good game.
Yeah, and they had Kirk Howe was their goalie from Tennessee. Captain Kirk was the goalie for Notre Dame.
I'm sure fans of other teams are going to really love this discussion.
Well, I mean, I think it just speaks to how tough it was for Hopkins to win in Bird Stadium in the postseason in the 90s and the early 2000s. When did 99? I'm trying to remember the 99 season. That was – so 99, Virginia in the national semifinals in Bird Stadium.
Oh.
So stack them all up, man.
It has been a house of horrors.
All up. 93, semifinal loss. 95, semifinal loss. 90, I'm forgetting 96. I don't remember how 96 ended. But 97, quarterfinal loss. 98, quarterfinal loss. 99, semifinal loss. 2000, semifinal loss. 2001, quarterfinal loss. I'm holding up seven fingers.
Yeah, I'm glad they changed the name of the stadium.
Yeah.
So that gets us into our give and go, Dix. The Maryland-Hopkins rivalry, right up there with Army-Navy. I'd give, because of my passion for the Blue Jays, a little bit of the edge in best lacrosse rivalry.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to talk about the best rivalries in sports. I'll give you a second to think about yours. I'll go with my three.
Go ahead.
I'm going to start with
Duke-Carolina basketball.
That is one of them.
There you go.
That is probably the best one in college basketball. In
Notre Dame, everybody else football.
In football, I'll go with the Ravens and the Steelers.
Okay.
I think that's not just what our take would be, but I think a lot of people around the country would agree that that's been pretty good the last at least decade.
Sure.
Great matchups. Each team has won a couple of Super Bowls in the last 15 years or so, or 20 years. And it's always a relevant matchup when those two teams play in the regular season. And then finally, I know this is a cop out, but I'm going to go with that weekend in November of college football. And I don't care whether it's Harvard Yale is the big game, Ohio State Michigan, or Amherst and Williams, whatever those rivalry games are of the two schools that meet in the final weekend of the college football season, the regular season. Man, those games are just the best. Every one of them.
Yeah.
And I'll say that just college football rivalries, whoever your true rival is in college football, that's the best to me. What do you got?
So I echo Ravens Steelers as a big Ravens fan. Just great games. And begrudgingly, I mean, you can't stand the Steelers as a Ravens fan, but begrudgingly you respect them because basically it's kind of fan bases, organizations, and players like looking in the mirror at each other. Like very similar styles, similar approaches. I think some crazy things have happened over the years. You know, Mike Tomlin, what was it, the Thanksgiving game, trying to trip Jacoby Jones.
Oh, yeah.
And then trying to say he didn't mean to do it. Like, come on, man. Dude ran 5 yards, into the white strip, stuck his leg out. I remember the home opener a few years ago where the Ravens beat the Steelers 35-7, and Haloti Ngata was just abusing Roethlisberger. Like, that was pretty cool.
What did Suggs say to Roethlisberger? God can have your soul, but your ass is mine.
Yeah, something like that. And then the Steelers have like Hines Ward. We can't stand Hines Ward.
But if he played for our team.
But if he played for the Ravens, you'd think he was the greatest thing. Just smiling, cheap-shotting guys, drilling people in the back and stuff like that. So, yeah, Ravens, Steelers. And I'm a huge baseball guy, so obviously Red Sox, Yankees.
No, stop.
No, I'm kidding. I can't
purposely
take it.
Left them off.
I can't take it. When it's join us Sunday Night Baseball on whatever network. It's the Red Sox and the Yankees. Okay, they only get to play each other 15 times a year.
And it's every Sunday night.
Oh, it's nauseous. And then the other one is the Cardinals and the Cubs. It's okay, enough already. But, hey.
There's something about that I don't mind. But it's the Red Sox, Yankees. Every game. I know they get ratings, but every game is either a Red Sox game or a Yankees game. Or they're playing each other.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fantastic.
It's like, okay.
Who's in first place and who's got the best record in baseball right now? I believe it's the Baltimore O's.
There you go. All right. Don't get all
regional. You got to say while you can.
Don't get all crazy now. But no, I've really started watching a good deal of baseball over the last couple of years.
Have you been watching O's?
I watched the Orioles. I watched them last night. They hit the back-to-back dingers against the Rays. That was good. But no, Ravens Steelers. Now, I will go back to the Big East back in the 80s for basketball, being young, and not like a huge basketball guy, but watching Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova was in that mix.
Syracuse, Pearl, Washington.
I mean, those guys used to beat the hell out of each other.
They did.
That was fun. That was really fun to watch. And you didn't understand, being younger, you didn't really understand the, all the, how – you're like, oh, they're just playing tonight. You don't really understand the backdrop, how it affected standings and stuff like that. So the old Big East basketball back in the 80s.
Okay. And there was way back.
I think it was a 30 for 30 on that, too, with ESPN. That was really fascinating. Pardon me. I'm a big I'm a big wrestling guy, too. So I take, the Four Horsemen back in the 80s against whomever, whether it's the Road Warriors.
Who are
or
the Four Horsemen?
Four Horsemen. The original Four Horsemen.
Famine, Pestilence.
No, it was Ric Flair, Ole and Arn Anderson, and Tully Blanchard.
I've only heard of Ric Flair.
Yeah. So you never heard of Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard?
No.
I can see you not hearing about Ole, but that was fun, man. That was really fun stuff.
I remember the Iron Sheik, and who was his partner?
Iron Sheik is Nikolai Volkov.
Yeah, the Irish.
Iran, number one. Russia, the British. Number one. USA, ha, toy. And then Nikolai Volkov would always, please rise and respect the singing of the Russian national anthem by Nikolai Volkov. And the whole place would just go nuts throwing stuff. Meanwhile, Nikolai Volkov is really Russian and he lives in like Hunt Valley. He does, but he's really Russian. And the Sheik is really Iranian. And I just say that because, yeah, Nikita Koloff, Ivan Koloff was really Russian. And then Nikita Koloff, though, his real name was like Bob Jones. And he was from, he was from Miami. Kamala.
Of course he was.
Kamala, the Ugandan giant, was like, you know, Seth Green. No, actually, it's like a real person. Like Seth Johnson, you know, who was from, and then Yokozuna. Who played a big sumo Japanese
guy. What do
you mean played? It was his character.
They're characters?
Oh, you didn't know that? Yeah, okay. But no, Yokozuna, was his real name is like Rodney Smith. He was from Queens. You know, so it's like, you know.
So who are the Volkovs and the Iron Sheiks? The arch enemy was the British Bulldogs or something?
No, I think they used to tangle with the U.S. Express. That was Mike Rotundo and Barry Windham. The British Bulldogs, I think, were in the mix back then.
This is all before Hulk and all that stuff, right?
It was right around the time of Hulk Hogan. See, I've never been a Hulk Hogan guy. I don't like Hulk Hogan.
I don't
either. He's just, you know, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, brother. You know, whoever was wrestling Hulk Hogan would be who I was like rooting for. And you never know. And back then, you believe that it was like, oh man, Big John Studd has a chance tonight, man. Big John Studd's taking the strap. And then inevitably, Big John Studd just can't keep up with Hawkster, you know, so he low blows him, he gets DQ'd and stuff like that. But no, wrestling back then was fun. You know, Paul Orndorff, Mr. Wonderful, Macho Man Randy Savage, they both formed alliances with Hawk, only to turn on him eventually. So they get sick of the Hawkster, you know, end up beating him up before a match or something like that, or after a match. And the announcers back then were great. Gorilla Monsoon, Jesse the Body Ventura. Oh man, they were great. And then on the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, which had the Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors and Magnum TA, the Russian, the Koloffs. Who else was big? Lex Luger. Lex Luger eventually joined Four Horsemen.
Where was Rowdy Roddy?
Rowdy Roddy Piper was WWF. Yeah, he was and he was fantastic. I mean, that guy was great on the mic and all that. But Tony Schiavone and David Crockett were the announcers for the NWA. Even though I was super young, I knew a terrible announcer when I heard one. David Crockett was the worst ever.
Crockett?
I think it was David. He was Crockett was the last name, but Tony Schiavone was like pretty good. And then David Crockett, there he is, there he goes. Magnum TA grabs Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. He grabs you. Oh, he whips him in, and it's like the worst commentary ever, you know. But you loved it because it was great, you know. So I went on a huge wrestling tangent. I don't know why. Probably because
you were talking about the rivalries in wrestling and in the old days between.
Yeah. The Four Horsemen and the Road Warriors.
And the Road Warriors.
And everybody. And Hands of Stone, Ronnie Garvin was in there. Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant. But the Horsemen just like owned everything. And they had the manager, J.J. Dillon. And that was back.
Any of these.
And that was, you had the Midnight Express as well with Jim Cornette. And Jim Cornette had the loaded tennis racket. So like the referee would turn his head and then he would smack a guy with the tennis racket, knock him out, you know, stuff like it was just great, man. It was just like real fun. You know, it was like just fun stuff. Saturday nights they'd be on TBS and they would actually film the wrestling from the studio with like 20 people in the audience, and like guys would start going crazy. Ric Flair would take his shoe off and like start beating a guy over the head with it.
I remember a lot of metal folding chairs being blasted over guys' heads.
That came more in the 90s when the WWF became WWE and had like the Attitude era. Tables, ladders, chairs, you know, the Dudley boys, the Hardy boys. Who else? I mean, these guys would just like Mick Foley from Ward Melville, who played goalie back in high school. I mean, the dude would like get thrown off of a steel cage, you know, with thumbtacks in his back and like crash to the announcer's table. I mean, you literally thought the guy was dead. it was awesome. That was fun stuff.
Hammering paychecks.
It was a tough life of the
stars, but what are they? The
jobbers. The heels. Well, yeah, the heels and the faces.
Yeah.
The heels were the bad guys. The jobbers. Faces were the good guys. That's then you had the jobbers. Oh, nothing would be more frustrating.
That's a tough paycheck.
But
to
before you realize, so you always see the advertisements for WWF. It's like Saturday night, Baltimore Civic Center, blah blah blah. So like you turn it on at 4 o'clock on Saturday, thinking you're going to get that card, and it's like you know, it's Kamala against Barry Horowitz, like Barry Horowitz, but. Guys like Barry Horowitz, SD Special Delivery Jones, Tony Gurria, they'd always like, they were the jobbers, but they're the guys that would get a couple licks in. So you're thinking they're going to do it. You're like, oh, man. And then you get caught with a clothesline or something. It's just all over after that.
You can pull all these names, but you can't pull your top five teams that you voted for in the Maverick Media Poll each week.
I was right on top of the top five this week. Yeah, right were. On top of the top five.
You were. Oh, my God. That's great stuff, man.
So what did I say? I said Big East basketball back in the day.
Ravens Steelers. And then
I don't know what I mean.
I'll make it easy for you. I'll put a thought in you. Army Navy football.
I don't really get excited about that.
No,
I don't. Awesome. I mean, I watch it and I think it's great.
My brother-in-law is a West Point guy.
Yeah, so I'm not a I mean, my father was in the Army. My grandfather was in the Navy. My cousin actually went to the Naval Academy, but I never got super. I mean, I respect it, and I think it's great. I think it's an awesome venue and a scene, but, you know. Army Navy is transcendent. It's every sport.
Yeah.
It's football. It's basketball. It's lacrosse. And I say that because you look at, like, Michigan and Ohio State. I believe that's a football-only rivalry. And I think Michigan looks at it that way because Michigan has Michigan State. I think Ohio State takes the rivalry more serious than Michigan does. And they won't even call them Michigan. They call them that team up north, TTUN. Duke, North Carolina. I think that's a basketball rivalry.
Yeah. NC State's their rival in football. Carolina's rival in football is really
like,
NC
you don't
State.
Get it, you don't get, I mean, I think the Duke, Carolina lacrosse is great. But no one really gets excited about Duke versus North Carolina in football.
Yeah, you're right. It's a big game, but Duke's been down. They're not bad now, but for a long time they were so bad at football that you know you had to look other places to get a good rivalry for UNC. But you're right. There are single sport rivalry. Well, Hopkins, Maryland, and lacrosse. It's pretty
it lies. Well, but that's the only other than women's lacrosse. That's the only time that two schools play each other athletically because
a water polo, but maybe once in a while.
Well, you know, if you can,
perhaps a tennis match.
You want to go down into this. Probably soon to be renamed George Kennedy Pool or something like that.
It should be called.
I mean, it will be
George
eventually. Probably.
Kennedy Natatorium.
There you go. But I'm not super familiar with Pac-12. So maybe USC, UCLA. I mean, obviously that's a huge football rivalry. Does that transcend onto the basketball court, onto other sports? Yeah. I tell you, a rivalry that's nasty. It's downright just crazy. Well, if you look at football, it seems like everybody – in the NFC East, does everybody hate the Cowboys? Is that the way that works?
Most of the people around the NFL dislike the Cowboys.
Yeah, dislike the Cowboys.
They're either your team or they're not.
But in baseball, the Dodgers and the Giants. Like, how many times have you read stories about a Giants fan or a Dodger fan being at that other team's club and just getting beaten, you know, like...
The guy for the Giants, didn't he get killed? A Giants fan at opening day weekend years ago in L.A. got jumped and beat up.
May have.
I think he was killed or paralyzed.
I mean, it's like crazy stuff that goes on, you know. Yeah. That's baseball, you know. Yeah. And then you got baseball. Then you got the Raiders. I think there was when the Raiders played the Chiefs this year, there was an incident that was caught on video. Like, I don't know. Raiders fans were either getting thrown or like diving. No, this game was at Arrowhead, so it was in Kansas City. But it's just like Raiders fans, just like cleaning house, like beating the hell out of Chiefs fans and stuff. And like the Chiefs fans were like diving, like they were in the upper deck, so they're diving down. They were like diving down to tackle some of these Raiders. It was like a scene out of the old school WWE, man. You know, WWF, I should say. It was a WWF back in the day.
All right, so you need to settle on a third rivalry.
I can't. I'll say the Four Horsemen against the World. You know, back in the
day. There you go. That's our give and go for the week. And that's our show for the week. A lot of great games. Check out Dixie. He'll be doing Towson Hofstra on LAC Sports Network at noon on Saturday. Then he's driving down to College Park to do the big game we just talked about. Johns Hopkins Blue Jays against Maryland. Terps. For that game with national implications and Big Ten seeding implications, obviously. That game is at 8 o'clock on Big Ten Network. Be sure to check them out. Don't forget to listen to the other podcasts on our network, the In the Crease podcast. It was really good this week. I also want to wish Kyle Devitt a speedy recovery.
What happened to Kyle?
He had to go in a, he was hospitalized on Thursday, and he says stomach issues. Hopefully he's doing well.
Get well soon, Kyle.
Yeah. And Friday's Weekend Preview podcast with Quinn Kesenick and Terry Foy. You can reach out to us at @D_Fly on Twitter or at Dixon Lacrosse. Send us an email, dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Enjoy the games. We'll talk to you next week.